This is episode 60 of the Renew the Arts podcast, Patrons and the Problem of Fame. Welcome to the Renew the Arts podcast, where we discuss the role of art and creativity in the church and in the world. I'm your host, Michael Minkoff. Our motto at Renew the Arts is liberate Christian creativity, and we're doing this through cultivating Christian communities in and through the arts by inspiring art patronage and supporting artists. If you'd like to join our community of monthly donors and contribute to this podcast, please visit renewthearts.org/donate. If you want to join the Porchlight Network and begin your journey into patronage, go to app.porchlight.art and sign up as a host or a tender. Welcome back, and thank you for listening to the Renew the Arts podcast. It's Michael again, and I'm here for a second part of our Problem of Fame two-part series. In our first part, we talked about the problem of fame in general when it comes to the arts and why it's actually a problem. And then we talked a little bit about how it affects artists, both successful and unsuccessful artists. And I promised you that I would be back with a part two where we would talk about how the problem of fame affects patrons and consumers or commissioners, and also potentially some solutions for the problem of fame in the arena of the arts. But let's recap real quick about the problem of fame in case you didn't listen to the last episode. I do encourage you to, because there's a lot of groundwork that I laid there that will be helpful to you in addressing these issues in this episode. But just as a recap, the problem of fame is that because of the way that we have organized the selection and curation of the arts, only a very, very few artists are actually able to make a living in the arts, because only a very few artists are actually being supported by the vast majority of people. We talked about how the algorithms that we've set up are actually deepening that divide and making it worse in many ways, so that about less than 1% of artists can actually make a living from their art. We talked about how this results in art that aims at the wrong goal, that money or popularity, rather than it actually telling the truth or telling a truthful experience or deepening the appreciation of the audience for any discernible purpose. It's really oriented towards pleasure and comfort and familiarity, which is not necessarily the main or should be the main primary goal of the arts. And we talked about how that has a really negative effect, obviously, on unsuccessful artists who don't get support for their work. But we also talked about how it is a burden and a restriction on successful artists as well, who don't usually feel free to make the art that God might be giving them at any given moment, and instead feel like they need to continue to feed what has been accepted before. And the whole business is set up that way, where you end up with Xeroxes of Xeroxes of Xeroxes of work that has already been successful. And it's a lot harder to break through if you're doing something that isn't necessarily familiar to the market or to the audience. And so I think we made a pretty compelling case that artists are pretty badly affected by this problem of fame, and that it's basically turned the arts industry or the arts profession into a crapshoot, a lottery, if you will, where most artists don't really have a great chance or a great certainty that they'll be able to make it, even if they work really hard and produce a lot of good work. And so a lot of Christian artists, particularly, who want to maintain the integrity of their work, end up having to become tent makers of some kind or another in order to make a living while they're doing their art on the side. And again, we talked about how unhelpful that actually was for the artist, but let's get into how that affects the patrons. And by patron, I mean somebody who is a supporter or investor in the arts. Let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. You are all patrons of the arts, almost certainly. There might be a few Luddites out there who are really living, you know, the rural life out in wherever, nowhere, and you have no relationship whatsoever to the arts and entertainment industry. But I would imagine that most of our listeners, given the fact that you're listening to a podcast, don't fall into that particular category. I'd say that's probably pretty rare. You almost certainly are patronizing or buying art of various different kinds. You might not think of it in these terms, but I mean, you probably have subscriptions to various streaming services for movies and shows. You probably have subscription services to various musical platforms for streaming like Spotify or Amazon or Apple. And you very likely also have some kind of art or decoration in your house, visual art or otherwise. And all of that is patronage of the arts. And it's likely that you had some process for finding those various different kinds of arts, movies, shows, music, visual art that you actually use and like. The problem of fame then does affect you. And we touched on this real lightly in the last episode, that in one of the studies that they did of the algorithm and the way that we select music according to popularity, that one of the problems with that method of selection is that it actually reduces the quality and the variety of the art that is available to the consumer or the patron. In one of these studies, it talked about the fact that a algorithm system that continues to reinforce what is already popular tends to produce popularity among mediocre pieces, so that the very best, the most challenging, the most specific art oftentimes is buried in that selection process and hidden from the average user. They did mention that the very, very worst art usually wasn't selected, but that oftentimes even really good art was buried in the algorithm and not really able to be seen for the most part. And that oftentimes mediocre work, once it became familiar or popular, tended to be reinforced by the search. With that in mind, it reduced the quality, and this was their conclusion, that it reduced the quality and variety of the art that was available to patrons. Maybe you think, well, what's wrong with that? Well, I don't, I hardly even know what to say to you. If there are lots of really good pieces out there that you can't find or won't find because it's not popular enough to break through the noise, then your life with the arts is actually being hampered and hindered. And the work that you are receiving is probably not worth your attention to the same degree that it's being thrust in your face. That does affect your life. That does affect your overall life. It affects the particularity and the enjoyment and the depth of enjoyment that you can have with the work that you are interacting with. And I would say that that flows pretty nicely into the second problem of fame and how it affects patrons. And that is that it hampers the development of taste in the patron. It actually hampers the development of the breadth and depth of taste in the patron. One of the things that should be understood is that we're not like computers where we have a set fixed reality of perception and understanding, and then data comes in and whatever framework we're working with or whatever hardware we're working with just interacts with that data and is unchanged by it. Instead, the very apparatus that you're using to pursue the world and to understand the world is also being affected and shaped by the things that come into it. So it's not just that you use your understanding to understand information. It's also that the information you take in affects your understanding. In the same way, it's not just that you use your taste to go and pursue and enjoy art. It's also that the art that you take in actually shapes and forms your taste. And I mean, everyone knows this. I mean, you just think about, where did your tastes come from? There were probably some initial likes and dislikes, or we can say bends, where you were bent in a particular direction. You enjoyed this more than you enjoyed that. But more than likely, the depth of that taste or the contours of that taste were actually formed by use over time. You enjoyed something for a period of time, and the more you enjoyed it, the more you enjoyed it. And if that's the case, if you fill your life in the arts with mediocre work, it becomes the case that your taste is bent toward the mediocre. You know, let's just pick on something that, well, I don't know, maybe some of you like these, but like Hallmark movies. If you were to watch only Hallmark movies, and you, let's say you were to grow up watching only Hallmark movies, so that Hallmark movies were the movies that sort of became the standard for what a good movie was, then that is what you're going to think is good, and you're going to continue to reinforce that over time. So it would be helpful from the get-go if you had a wider variety and breadth and depth of movie to appreciate, and that would actually set, to some extent, your expectation for future movies that you're watching. So that when you watched a Hallmark movie, for instance, but you grew up, let's say, listening to or watching the 100 greatest movies ever made, and that was sort of what framed your framework, then you'd watch a Hallmark movie and you'd say, well, this doesn't seem very good. It's not very compelling. And a lot of that would be based on just how you had developed that taste over time. And so the more that it becomes the case that mediocre work is what's available to you, and that's what you're actually watching, and that's what you're actually shaping your mind according to and shaping your heart according to, the harder it will actually be for you to increase your breadth and your depth. You know, we've used food analogies in the past, but it works here as well. If you only ever eat fast food, the likelihood of your enjoying fast food is increased and of pursuing fast food is increased. But it's also the case that you start to not like food that is a little more challenging or a little bit more difficult, or that doesn't hit all those same nerve centers and fake your brain into thinking that you're eating something that's delicious. And that is a problem, that if you were to try to change your taste after many, 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 many years of fast food and junk food, you would actually have to do a very disciplined and active and intentional movement away from fast food until you could retrain your taste in a different way. The same goes for the arts, that the more this algorithm feeds us mediocre work and makes that our norm and makes that our baseline, the harder it is for us to appreciate the breadth and depth of great works, either from the past or in the present. That is a huge problem that we have been trying to deal with as an organization. Renew the Arts has kind of been up against that as a problem, and I've address this with artists and with thinkers in the past. Like, how do you actually solve that? Because so much of the arts is about appealing to people and trying to persuade them with something that is good. But if they don't consider it good, but you don't want to just make mediocre stuff in order to draw them in, like we've talked about this a number of times, like, is there a median that you have to get to, like kind of a middle ground that you have to get to, where you're drawing people slowly away from mediocrity and back toward excellence? Or is it more like a cold turkey thing that it's just you got to convince the patron to do it? I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, but we'll get into that a little bit when we talk about the solutions to this problem of fame. Let's talk about the third major problem. So if we're talking about the first two, it reduces the quality and variety of art that's available to the patrons. And it also hampers the development of taste, of breadth and depth in the patron, which connects to that first thing. This third thing is that it lowers the engagement and connection with local arts and artists, and actually reduces the community understanding of the arts and the community usefulness of the arts. Let's explore this a little bit, because maybe the effect of it is not as obvious. But we live in a highly individualized culture, in a culture where, I mean, you can call it individualized. It is also a little bit self-referential or self-oriented, where each particular person believes that they are kind of a world unto themselves, and where art and other goods just kind of get viewed as commodities for the individual. They're marketed to the individual. They're consumed by the individual, oftentimes individually, with your headphones on or with your phone. So this experience of the arts and community is much less and much lowered in our time. And it's hard for us to see how big of a problem that is, because again, this is kind of the water that we're swimming in. But there was a time when the arts in general were very much oriented toward communities, where communities were experiencing things together, and the arts were designed to tell the stories of particular local areas in a way that everybody could live in and dwell in and kind of understand and interact with, whether it's, you know, everybody getting together and singing songs together, or going down to the local theater and watching a play together, or watching a movie together, and actually having that be produced by people in the local area as well. Maybe not movies as much, but definitely plays and musical performances. And then that's a thing that the community was able to bond around and draw together around. The other part of that, which is really important, and we've seen this over and over again working in this space, people tend to have much deeper, much more rich and meaningful experiences with the arts when there is some sort of a personal or local or familial or friendly connection to the art and the artist. For instance, you might listen to a song by an artist and think, I don't really know what this guy is talking about. I don't know what he's referencing. I mean, you might even read like a really old poem about a particular battle or a particular event and say, well, I didn't live through that battle. I didn't experience that event. I don't really know what's going on here. And you might have to read a history or something like that in order to understand what was going on in the background of the poem or the song so that you can understand it a little bit better and maybe engage with it a little bit more. But if you're trying to receive art from just like a single centralized source, the reality is that they are going to have to reduce the particularity and the locality of what they're producing. They're going to have to lower it down enough to where there's not enough particulars in it to keep anybody from interacting with it, which is why, you know, most love songs that are written nowadays are really, really, really generic. They have to be. They have to be so broad, so general, so unspecific that literally anybody could listen to it and say, yeah, I think I've had experiences that I could pour into this. And that's not the case when you get to really, really good and really, really in-depth art. Even ancient art, usually, is very specific when it's good. And it usually stands the test of time. If it stands the test of time, it's because it does have a level of specificity and uniqueness to it. Again, because people are like, this is one of a kind. I'm not just going to throw this away. This is not just going to go on the junk pile of history. There's not just a billion like it. This is something that's talking about something specific and particular. And oftentimes for the audience that received it in the first place, it is something very communal and very personal to that particular community. And that community listens to it or receives it as a whole. It helps to increase and deepen those bonds between the people. And it also gives each individual who's experiencing that art a personal connection that then deepens, again, enriches their experience of that art. We've seen this a lot with Renew the Arts. Oftentimes a person will listen to a song or a group of songs and, you know, I'm like forcing my friends to listen to somebody. And I'm like, here, sit down, listen to this record, listen to these songs. Aren't they really, really good? And, you know, people are polite, but you can tell when somebody's talking halfway through a song or when their attention's not really there and they're just not terribly engaged. Other times, you know, maybe I take those same friends and I'm like, hey, come and meet the artist who made this work that you were kind of yawning through before. And they'll meet the artist and they'll have a personal connection with the artist. And maybe they'll see the artist play a show and they'll be able to talk to him before or after and experience this artist as a person and have that kind of personal connection to them. And all of a sudden, it's interesting. It creates this added value to the work of that artist. So that now I'll have those same friends who may maybe yawned through that song the first time they heard it. And now all of a sudden they're investing in it and they're more interested. And they're like, I know where this came from. I know the person who produced this. I want to listen to this. I want to know it better. So that's one way of increasing that familiarity. And the reality is that the problem of fame kind of robs the patron of that experience, of that personal connection with the art and the artist by making both the art and the artist so general, so distant, so centralized that that's not really a part of your enjoyment of the art. The art has to be just a commodity that you consume and really move on to other things. And you're not really engaged with it in a personal or meaningful way, just a consumable product.
Hey there, this is Katie Martin, President and CEO of Renew the Arts. We'll get right back to this episode in a moment, but I wanted to sneak in and say thank you for listening to the Renew the Arts podcast. If you are a regular listener and find the conversations on this podcast valuable, I want to ask you to consider making this the year you become a monthly donor. I know Michael has mentioned this opportunity previously, but as a reminder, we have a matching grant available to new monthly donors. Thanks to the commitment of one of our generous board members, any new recurring donations starting at just $10 a month will be matched 100% up to $10,000 for the rest of this year. We have quite a ways to go to take full advantage of this pledge, so please visit renewthearts.org/donate to get started. Thank you in advance for your support. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
To recap yet again, just so we can make sure, and I'm sure there's other things that you all could come up with to think about, what are these problems that affect patrons from this issue of fame in the arts? But it reduces the quality and variety of art available to patrons. It hampers their development in taste, both in the breadth and depth of the patron. And it lowers engagement and connection with local arts and artists, and lowers the community bond that is able to be created through the arts. Those are major problems. And given that it is a problem, if you think it is a problem, which I think it is, and maybe you ask, well, why is it a problem? Who even cares about the arts? Well, we have a lot of other podcasts that maybe will convince you of the essential reality of the arts. But this is something that is affecting not just the enjoyment of people's lives, but also the meaning and the purpose of people's lives. It is important that as a community and as a church, we have art and artists in our community that do tell us something about the purpose and the goal and the meaning of our shared experience. And without artists, that is, I would say, very much belittled and impoverished inside the church. If that's something that's important to you, and you're looking at it and you're saying, yeah, this problem of fame seems like a real issue, it certainly is lowering and impoverishing the arts, what do we do about it? Well, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what I think would be some solutions for the problem of fame. And this has two prongs, because the solution is a little bit two-sided. You've got the artists on one side and you have the patrons on the other, and they both have a part to play in this. I'm going to talk first to the artists. I recently watched a keynote address by Jack Conte for the South by Southwest Festival. And Jack Conte is the founder of Patreon and is also one half of the Pomplamoose duo. He was talking about the advent of the internet age and all the promise that it held. And he was talking about how really Pomplamoose became extremely popular through the internet and engaging with their fans. And then he talked about how the attention economy of the later stages of the internet has in many ways undermined and deteriorated the value of the internet for creators to engage with their audience. And at the end of it, he gave a few pieces of advice that I'm going to adapt to some extent. But he gave a few pieces of advice to artists. And I thought that they were good. And it's worth watching the keynote address. I will warn you beforehand that he doesn't refrain from using various kinds of language that you might consider inappropriate or offensive. But aside from that, the content of what he had to say was at least interesting and worth exploring. One of the things that he said is to, the first thing he said was to invest in your true fans. This was for content creators or for artists. And he did call them creators rather than creatives, which I really appreciate. His first piece of advice for creators was that they invest in their true fans. And I would say this is important: invest in your audience. And that might be small, that might be a few people, but one of the things we talked about as a problem that comes from the problem of fame is that a lot of artists don't really appreciate the people who are actually caring about their work. You might have, you know, your mom, your friends, and a couple of other people who really care about your work. Why not invest in them as your audience, as your fans? Write with them in mind and reward them for the investments that they're making. Don't just set that aside as not important until you can get your, you know, 10 million followers on Spotify. The 10 million followers on Spotify might not actually be as important as those few people in your local environment who are really supporting your work and who really invest in it and care about it. So invest in them. Invest in them as an audience. Write for them. Think about them. Consider them. And do what you can to reward them for the attention that they're giving you. And there's all sorts of various ways of doing that. You can look at the video to figure out some of those. But some of them might be creating special events for those particular fans where you really pour into them, writing songs or writing works or painting paintings or taking photographs or whatever for those particular people who really care about your work. Those two things are really helpful to investing in that particular audience. And as they are served well, that audience will probably grow. And even if it doesn't, you'll always know the people that you're working for and serving and that are going to appreciate the work you're doing. The second thing he recommends, and I'm going to tweak it a little bit, but he basically says, make beautiful things. By that, what he meant was you should not lower your standards or try to make something other than what you want to make in order to try to chase after the algorithm or chase after marketability. It's important, in my words, to make what God has given you. God has given you as an artist important things to say and a particular view of the world and a particular experience that you need to express in the way that he's given you to express it. And that may not be marketable, or it may not seem marketable. Who even knows what is marketable? Nobody can tell. Not even the marketing people can tell what will be marketable. So don't worry about that. Just make the best that you can of what God has given you. And keep on pursuing that. That should be your goal as an artist, is to make the best you can of what God has given you to make. And then the third thing that he says is know what you want. And this is basically a define and refine your goals. What are your goals in the arts as an artist? Now, if you're going into it thinking, I want to be famous or I want to make money, that's a really bad goal to have, not just because I don't think that should be your primary motivation. It's also a terrible goal to have because it's almost certainly not going to happen for you. And since you're probably not going to make a living, setting all your sights on that and hoping in that, it's pretty futile hope, and I recommend that you desist. And instead, think about what do you actually want to accomplish with the arts? What do you think God has called you to do with the arts? And it might be that you're writing praise music to praise God directly and Lord willing to help a congregation to do that. It might be that you're doing sacred art, sacred visual art of various different aspects of the scriptures or stories in the scriptures or things like that in order to help people understand them in a little bit more of a fleshed out way. Or it may be that your whole purpose is to tell your particular story that you think is unique or that might be helpful to others. Whatever it is that God has called you to do, you need to figure that out. You need to sit down with him quietly and meditate and ask him and wait for that answer and work while you wait to try and search and explore for what is the thing that God is going to have you do. And if it's not make a living or get real famous, you know, okay, maybe he doesn't give that to you. But what is he giving to you? And what are you wanting to accomplish with it? It may be that if you're not going to be able to make a living, you got to be a tent maker of some kind or whatever. Go for that, and it'll make you a lot more comfortable doing that if your main goal is not trying to break through and make a living and get famous. If you can set a goal that's actually realizable, that's reasonable, then you'll probably be a happier and less frustrated person. Not only that, all of those things will help you to make the kind of art that actually will serve an audience, even if you don't have that audience yet. So those three things: invest in your audience, make what God has given you marketable or not, and define and refine your goals for making art. So what is the solution, or what is pointing at a solution for patrons? Well, for patrons, there's a few things that I would recommend, and at the end, I'll talk a little bit about how Porchlight Art and Hospitality Network attempts to address these things and help you in these solutions. But the first thing I would say is invest in local artists and in real connections with the arts. There are probably artists that you know that are in your community, that are in your church or in the churches connected to your church, And you can probably meet them. You can probably talk with them. You could probably even commission work directly from them for a pretty affordable price. And it would be worth it for you to do that, to invest in those local connections. It will deepen your appreciation of those particular works when you really have a personal connection to them. And so I very much recommend that people lower the amount of art that they receive from huge conglomerates like Netflix and this big streaming services and the huge studios and everything like that. Lower the amount of art that you're receiving from them by investing a little bit of that in local artists. Again, you can probably find them in your church. You can probably find them in your local community. Just go show up, you know, to a house show or whatever that they're putting on, buy their record, listen to their record, and then maybe you can talk to them about their record or about their painting or about their play or whatever. I mean, there's almost certainly there are artists in your local area that you can invest in. So find them, do your best to find them, and support them. The second recommendation I would make is don't become enslaved to algorithms. It's really easy to let the various streaming services that we use tell us what we would like based on what we've already liked. And that can be useful and helpful. But again, this is almost certainly always going to come back to the top 40 mediocre pieces that have already become popular for whatever reason, or that they just want to shove down your throat. And oftentimes those algorithms are based on plays that are based on what they decide is going to be marketed. So it's like, we think all these people like this, but those people don't even really have a choice. This happened to me recently. I was unfortunately listening on shuffle to some kind of streaming service on another person's device. And I found that they, you know, were playing all these other singles on this playlist that had already been listened to, I guess, by other people who had listened to some of the other songs, you know. And I was like, well, now that additional listen that I did not ask for is now being entered back into the algorithm as a listen that reinforces this song as a song that should be played. And it sort of seems like a self-fulfilling prophecy at a certain point. Try not to get enslaved to those algorithms in the way that you choose what you're going to appreciate. And I would give you a couple of different pieces of advice on this. For visual art, I would recommend going and visiting museums, and visiting museums quite a bit, and especially looking at things that are older and that have really stood the test of time. These are things that are curated by other people who have taste. And speaking of that, I would listen to people in your community that have experience and taste, that have proven that they understand a little bit more about how to enjoy the arts. Go with them to, you know, concerts, go with them to museums, go with them to movies, go with them in general and just talk with them. Recently, our former president, Justice, talked about how instead of listening to the political debate, he went through a Bob Dylan record with a friend of his and curated the record for his friend. And then he did a little live tweet of that experience in his feed. And I thought that that was really great. And I recommend that you do it. If you don't have a person like Justice in your neck of the woods, I'm sure there's somebody like him who can sit you down, play a record with you, enjoy some good fellowship and talk about it with you and enjoy it with you. That's a great way to get outside of the algorithm. It's just listen to people who like those things and who have great experience with those things and have good taste, and let them help you to enjoy those things. And then the other thing is, use what you already like to deepen your appreciation. I've said this in a few other places in terms of learning how to refine your taste, but I like to think of it as ink bleed, you know? You don't necessarily have to like everything in a particular genre, but if there's anything in a particular genre that you can like, invest in that. Learn more about that particular artist. Learn more about what they did and even explore why you like it. And then over time, as you do that, I think what you'll find is that the edges of the things that you already like will touch. There will be overlapping horizons between other things that you might could like, and you'll start to find yourself enjoying broader and broader as you go deeper and deeper in these particular areas. So I would go deep before you go broad, with the expectation that a deepening appreciation in any particular location is actually going to increase the broadness of your appreciation over time. So take my advice on that one, please. And whatever you do like, try to go deeper into it. And then maybe that will start to touch on other things that are adjoining that you might be able to enjoy as well. And just like we talked about the artist needing to define and refine their goals, I would say that a patron also needs to define and refine the goals of engaging with the arts. There are some not very good primary goals that I would say most people probably do have when it comes to the arts. The first and most primary not good goal, so I'm starting with not good goals, so don't get me wrong, these are not good in my opinion. I do not believe it is good for your primary goal concerning the arts to be about pleasure or comfort. I want to pause here for a second and talk about this. I'm not saying that art shouldn't be pleasurable or comfortable. Some art is, and some good art is pleasurable. And sometimes there's art that might be pleasurable to a person who has learned or attuned to it that isn't even pleasurable to other people, and that's fine. But if your primary goal in pursuing the arts or engaging with the arts is to derive pleasure or comfort, the likelihood of you getting deep, meaningful interactions with the arts is slim to zero, because you're going to avoid the kind of art that's going to give you a deeper experience. You're basically forcing the art that you appreciate to just stay on the surface, not deal with anything that might be challenging or difficult, and also not require anything of you, not require any growth in you, not require concentration in you, not require effort or investment on your part. And that is going to be, you know, it's going to create the kind of art that we tend to see out there, where they're just empty, vapid, substanceless pieces that are just designed to enthrall and thrill and please, but that don't actually have any purpose or value beyond that. So don't set that as a primary goal. If you're saying, I don't want to do this because that's not very pleasing or not very comfortable to me, you know, at least set aside a couple of movies of your movie watching diet or budget or whatever and say, okay, usually I'm watching Hallmark movies, but occasionally I really need to insert a movie that I'm not going to for pleasure, but that I'm actually going to in order to be edified or built up in some way. And again, if you're like, well, I don't even know which movie I would choose in that case, please talk to somebody who has some experience. Ask them, hey, if you were going to tell me what's like the best movie ever, right? What would you say? Like, what movie should I see that I haven't seen? And maybe you just go online and say 100 greatest movies of all time. And you say, how many of these movies have I seen? It's worth doing. And occasionally just, you know, going and watching a Citizen Kane, even if you're like, it's long and it seems kind of boring. Well, yeah, but give it attention and see why people have liked it and see if maybe you can too. And if you don't, that's fine, but it'll be a good experience and it will grow you and deepen you a little bit. Okay, so that's a not good primary goal is for pleasure and comfort. You shouldn't have that as your primary goal. You should be aware if that is your primary goal and realize that that is going to be a problem, because it is going to continue to reinforce the shallowness and superficiality of your taste. Okay, number two, another not good primary goal is membership in an in-crowd. A lot of people will listen to particular music or watch particular movies or be fans of particular directors or whatever because they want to be a member of the crowd that likes that. My wife, who's super, super cool, way, way cooler than I am, she was an early adopter, for instance, of Nirvana. This was back when she was an unbeliever, but she really liked the band Nirvana. And so before it was cool, she was wearing grungy jeans and flannel shirts. And she was a big fan, you know. And then once it became sort of cool to be a fan of Nirvana, once he got a lot more popular and like Smells Like Teen Spirit was on the radio, she started to notice that all these like posers, you know, wannabes, were also wearing flannel shirts that they like got at Hot Topic or whatever at the mall. And that it had sort of become co-opted into this in-crowd group. she didn't like that. And it really, it caused her to kind of move in a different direction, which might have been for good and maybe is the providence of God. But it's just an illustration of the fact that a lot of people will listen to music or like movies or like directors or like visual art or et cetera. They'll like it because of what it says about them, and they want to be a member of some particular exclusive group, or maybe not even an exclusive group. They want to be a Swiftie. They want to be part of this community of people. And it's sort of a false version of the local community you could have when you start investing in more personal connections with artists in a local environment. It's sort of a simulation of that, a parody of that. And I would say it's not a great primary goal, again, because there's vanity in it, because you shouldn't listen to or watch art because of what it says about you necessarily, as what it says about you in terms of your value or whatever. Because again, you don't have value in your connection to that artist or to that art. Your value is far beyond that. That can be an extremely crippling and stifling thing, again, to you, to the artist, to the arts. And so I would avoid that as well. And if you find yourself falling into it, either you're not liking something because you don't want to be part of a crowd that might like it, or you are liking something because you want to be part of a crowd, I would say, you know, it's just a red flag. You should beware. Then the third not great reason would be confirmation bias, because the music or the movie or the visual art or whatever tells you something about yourself that you already believe, or tells you something about the world that you already believe, and it confirms that, and it gives you, again, sort of like a comfort thing, gives you that sense of security that there are others out there also who are just like you. I would say, again, not a great primary goal. One of the things that creates is that you go to work and you go to art that is not really adding very much to your perspective of the world. You're not learning really very much about anybody else or about other people's experiences. You're really just continuing to live in that little echo chamber of yourself. And again, that's not edifying. It's not toward growth. So those are three bad reasons that I would say are not great goals for engaging with the arts. What are some good goals? And so if you're going to define and refine your goals of engaging with the arts, there are four really good goals that I would say are worth exploring. One, the arts can deepen your personal appreciation of God's truth, beauty, and righteousness. And so you should pursue art that does that, art that tells you a little bit more about reality in a way that is engaging and convicting and enlightening and inspiring and encouraging. I would say that you should pursue art that tells you a little bit more about God's idea of beauty, what is beautiful. And sometimes the way to do that is through the exploration of what is not beautiful. This is something that is ugly. And you see in the you know, outline of this ugly thing, how you now understand beauty and truth a little bit more. And then also God's righteousness. Obviously, you want to pursue art that inspires and encourages and exhorts you toward what is right and away from what is unjust and what is wicked. And again, that doesn't mean that it doesn't depict wickedness. It's just that it depicts wickedness as wickedness rather than glorying in wickedness and in the power of evil. Two, understand human experience beyond your own. Art is a great way of doing that. Artists tend to be affectional. They understand the affections and human emotions. They understand both how to express them as well as to elicit them. And they also understand oftentimes human experiences that you haven't had or that you don't understand. And art is a way of entering into those human experiences in a way that grows you and expands you and expands your understanding of other people. And I would say that's a really good goal when you're going to the arts, is saying, I want to understand how other people see the world more accurately. And I don't want to just see the world the way I've already seen it. I want to be enlightened toward other people's views of things so that I can have a multitude of counselors concerning reality. The third thing I would say, another good goal for engaging with the arts, would be to develop community connections and bonds. So again, this would be a reason to go to concerts with friends or with a community, or to engage with and interact with a community that's around a particular concert or a particular artist or musician. And again, local better so that you can actually interact with people and have real connections and have real bonds. And then the fourth thing I would say is to support artists in their calling, especially artists that are not being currently supported by the music market or the arts market as it is. Either, you know, musicians, visual artists, etc., to be able to commission work from them, to be able to appreciate their work and give them feedback, etc. That is very supportive. And artists in your area, I'm telling you, artists probably in your church, in your neighborhood, etc., they really do need that support in order to keep going. Some of it is obviously they need to feed their families and whatnot. But even if you can't personally make it possible for them to pursue the arts for a living, you at the very least can be the kind of audience that will make it worth their while to keep doing the work. And that is also really important. So those are some goals that you could have: to deepen your personal appreciation of God's truth, beauty, and righteousness, to understand human experience beyond your own, to develop community connections and bonds, and to support artists in their calling. I just want to say right at the end here, I think Porchlight does a really good job of addressing all of those things. I don't think it solves it yet, but it does address those things by allowing you to actually have in-home connections with artists, and that increases that personal connection so that you can actually engage with the art and with the artists, with your friends in a community. It's a way of showing hospitality that deepens that bond between you and your friends and family and those other people who you invite, those strangers that you invite. It obviously supports the artists who are coming into your home in their particular calling by giving them a venue where they can present their work, but also by supporting them financially with gifts. And it also will deepen your personal appreciation of God's truth, beauty, and righteousness. You're kind of taking a cue from us that these artists are worth investing in, trying to listen to somebody who maybe has experience and taste in these so that you yourselves can be edified and so you can edify friends and family in your community as well while supporting these artists who are definitely worthy of your support. So I highly recommend, if you haven't already gotten involved with Porchlight, I'm going to say, just go to app.porchlight.art and start your patronage journey. I'm not just selling something. Like, we made Porchlight for a specific purpose in order to try to address what we considered to be a really important area that was really not being supported well enough within the church. So go to app.porchlight.art and get going on that. And we'd be happy to help you in any way you need help in order to make that happen. But I promise you, you will not regret it. It will be worthwhile in the end. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to me monologue for two episodes about the problem of fame. And I hope that it's been really edifying to you. And if it hasn't been really edifying to you, I'm very sorry. Maybe you can go and listen to some of our other episodes, or leave me a comment and tell me how wrong I am. I would appreciate it. Any interaction or engagement is really helpful to us. It lets us know that you guys are listening and that this is a valuable conversation for you to be having and entering into. So, to close this show, I wanted to play a track from Jacob Davis Martin, a local musician and performer around here. And we've helped him record and mix a few records in the past, and he's a good friend at this point. And for years, he and his family have also been hosting live shows outside, and they've built a stage in their backyard, and they've been hosting these live shows at their house, and they embody the kind of hospitality and arts investment we've really tried to champion at Porchlight. So I love this song choice for that reason. I got Jake's permission to use his song, 5-Year Town, from his record, Ain't It All Just Golden. And I wanted to close this podcast with it because it's a track that kind of takes a darkly humorous view of the life of a touring musician trying to make it in the music business. And you'll kind of catch the turn of the lyrics as it goes. It's a little bit of a joke, but it's kind of a sad one. Anyway, I thought it was an appropriate way to close, for now, our discussion of art and the problem of fame. And I hope you really enjoy it. So here's 5-Year Town by Jacob Davis Martin.
Tennessee. We've been grounded by the rising stars. So come down to 92nd Saturday's Way. 6 months and 5 years. Folks back home, they don't understand it. Folks back home, can be real demanding. Where's your record deal? Have you played around? 6 months in a 5 year time. And sometimes it can be disappointing. A 2 month boy is the next one anointed. But I'd be a fool to let it get me down. 6 months and 5 year time. In a 5 year town, I've got 10 minutes to turn my life around. Oh, the universe is looking for the next big sign. 4 years in a 5 year town. They turned me down just like I expected. I told my folks I'm in the business of learning tough lessons. Everybody's gotta pay their dues. Selling boots for 4 years in a 5 year time. I don't need their quick gratification. I learn my keep and keep on praying for patience. God's got a plan, mama, I got one too. I'm about to cut loose on this 5 year time. Search for my name when the kids start talking about the stars in their eyes. Tell them sit right down, let me tell you a little story about a boy I need. Every single penny, every year to never knew.